Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show in association with Newsarama.com. This is John Suntress. Today, Jeff Loeb joins us after watching the ninth episode of Heroes for a look at the NBC show so far this season, the possible fate of the Heroes Origin spinoff, and the future for Heroes, whenever that happens. We'll also get some thoughts on his upcoming work on Marvel Comics like The Hulk and Ultimates Volume 3. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. They've got all new 75% discounts on pre-ordered new releases and more discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. On sale right now at MailOrderComics.com, Hulk number 1, written by Jeff Loeb, drawn by Ed McGuinness. Regularly priced at $2.99, the discounted price just $1.79. from MailOrderComics.com. Every month you'll be able to enjoy standard discounts of 38% off on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers, but they've doubled the specials with discounts of 50% or more. For all the details, go to MailOrderComics.com. Well, this was a fast and loose show that we put together quickly to be able to turn it around and get it to you as quickly as possible. So without further ado, here's Jeff Loeb on Word Balloon. Well, what's your routine like when an episode airs? I mean, did you already see what we saw, or was this your first, you know, time
seeing it? I haven't seen it final. And then we tend to have, you know, 6 or 8 people over to the house. Sometimes I get such dignitaries as Jeff Johns.
Oh, very nice.
Or Michael Turner.
Cool.
But usually it's friends. And
as opposed to them.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we sit and boo and hiss and make fun of it and talk through the commercials. And I like watching it that way. I can't stand, I understand TiVo, but I actually sort of like watching who's sponsoring the show and what those ads seem like and how annoying they are.
Well, and it seems like this episode in particular, I was surprised a couple times when I'd look at the time and say, oh my God, there's still 10 minutes left. Because you guys crammed a lot into this episode.
You know, this is one of those episodes that felt like what people used to always talk about the show and hadn't heard in a little bit, which was that, you know, you'd get to the end of Act 4 and you couldn't believe there still was another 10 minutes. But the funny part about it is it's just they're all the same length.
Yeah.
And you can't really figure out, you know, why some of them feel like they're chock full and some of them feel like they're less chock full.
I wanted to ask a couple big questions, and they've maybe have already been addressed, but things, when we heard that Heroes Origins had been canceled because of the writer's strike, does that just mean it gets pushed back another season? Or, you know, obviously, I mean, it sounds like nothing obviously will move forward until after the strike ends, but will we still see the story's planned for that 8-episode arc, you know, within the regular seasons of Heroes, or as even a spinoff? Do we know?
Well, that's a whole bunch of questions.
Okay.
Let's begin with, I have no control over whether or not we ever see it again. It's certainly our hope, and we were having a ball working with Kevin Smith and John August and Michael Donnelly and
I heard Eli Roth, too.
And Eli Roth. It was, you know, it was great. And then Jesse Alexander and I were writing one, and Kring was writing one. So that was 6. They weren't 8.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure whether or not everybody really understood exactly what Origins was. But basically, they were standalone episodes of characters that you'd never met before. They weren't tied into the mythology of the regular show, except in that it all lived in the same world.
Okay.
And that the characters all began in the same kind of place, which was that they were ordinary human beings, ordinary people who had developed an extraordinary ability. And some of them were shocking, and some of them were funny, and some of them were adventuresome. I mean, it was just an attempt to be able to work in different genres, tell stories that focused on one or two characters, and to open it up to a community that was not steeped in the same kind of continuity that the show is.
I understand. Like an anthology show, basically.
It was as close to an anthology show as you could imagine.
And I know that's a bad word in comics and in TV, but I, you know, being a fan of the things like The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits.
And those were the things, that was Kring's passion, and that's what he wanted to have happen. And, you know, the closest thing that we had to it was Amazing Stories.
Sure.
And, you know, we just sort of felt like the show was big enough to be able to support a second tier of storytelling, but not necessarily continuing the lives of the characters that you were already watching. And yes, if someone on the Origins episode popped and it felt like that was a story that was worth telling, we might consider bringing them up to what we refer to as the mothership.
Mm-hmm.
but that was never the intention, and that somehow got misrepresented in when we first announced the show. That it was, you know, as people would tease us, the American Idol for heroes. And it just never was designed to be that at all.
Okay.
There would be certain things that we all agreed, which were like, there might be an Isaac Mendez painting in one of the stories, or if you had to go to a copy center, you would go to Copy Kingdom as opposed to just a regular generic place. you certainly wouldn't walk into the one where HRG was working, though.
I gotcha. Okay. Go on if you wanted to.
But, you know, none of it bore any fruit. I mean, we were literally sort of at fourth and goal and about to turn in scripts and when they pulled the plug.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had a very tough decision, which was, we don't even know whether or not Heroes is coming back in the spring. Right. How are we going to justify the amount of money and time it's going to take to develop and produce this? They also didn't know at the time that the writer's strike was going to shut everything down. I mean, I think that there was some kind of hope that the showrunners and producer writers would continue to perform their producerial commitments,
mm-hmm.
and that just wasn't what happened.
Well, that answers one of my other questions, and that was going to be, because I remember during the Green Week just a couple weeks ago, we saw you briefly as part of that big, you know, thing that happened at Rockefeller. Was it at Rockefeller Center?
Yes, we were at Rockefeller Center, and there I was, looking very green.
No. It was good.
I had no idea I was doing that. I had gone on the tour. I was with Danya and James and Zach and Noah, who you probably know better as Maya and Ando and Siler and Micah.
Cool.
We were brought into this green event, which was really a reaction to people saying that, you know, how could we say that we were being eco-friendly and we were at the same time flying all around the world? And so, you know, somebody figured it out that if we planted 6,000 trees, it would be the same as whatever we had done.
There you go.
And it didn't, to me, I just liked the idea that we were planting all those trees.
Sure.
But, you know, I literally, like, as I was standing there planting the tree, and all we were doing was putting dirt into a pot because the trees were not getting planted at Rockefeller Center. They were being moved someplace else.
By plane, probably,
too. They turned to me and said, will you speak to the crowd? You know, and there were like 5,000 people standing in the middle of Rockefeller Center. And I was like, sure. And so I just started talking about, you know, how you are the heroes. And then completely forgot about it. And I'm sitting with 10 other people watching the show. And suddenly I recognize the footage from that day. But I have no idea that they're going to cut to me talking. And there's my smiling face on national television.
That was good, man. I was excited. I told my nephews love the show. And I'm like, that's the dude I talked to. I'm like, here he is. He's right there, man. Now, so I was going to ask, I mean, this, and believe me, I understand, and I'm with the WGA and why you guys are on strike. It's totally, you guys are, you know, trying to get what is yours. But this obviously comes at an inopportune time, talking to the producer side of your involvement in the show, with all the promotions that are tied to it, the G4 thing, are we going to see you on that Fast and Loose post show and stuff? Rocking with the...
Yeah, I don't know when that is. I think that was designed to be when we came back.
Okay. Oh.
Although I'm not sure.
Okay.
Someone told me that we were going to do it, and then the truth is, it's been radio silence since the strike.
Okay.
So the only people that have really talked to us have been, you know, us talking to each other, the writers.
Okay.
So I can't tell you. I was asked to do the show. I agreed I would do the show. I have no problem doing the show. But I haven't heard anything, and I don't know what they're doing.
Wow, so you don't talk to Kring or anything like that?
Oh, no. I talk to Kring all the time.
Okay.
But I consider Kring to be one of us.
He's a writer as well, yes.
It's sort of confusing when people say that we're striking against the producers. We're really not striking against the producers. We're striking against the networks and the studios,
mm-hmm.
which are actually a media conglomerate. And that's really what it ought to be, because the truth is, I'm a producer, you know, I'm an executive producer on the show.
Sure.
And so, you know, my responsibility to the show is to make the show. It's not my responsibility to pay for the show.
So, yeah, you're really striking against NBC and Universal.
Correct.
That's who the gripe is against, I understand. And it's fair to make that point.
That's who the Guild's gripe is against.
I'm hip.
So, I mean, like, I'm not personally going out and doing anything.
J'accuse.
Exactly. I don't want my name on the list. I just want everybody to understand.
No, that's cool, man. Absolutely.
But, you know, it's just a very weird time. But
yeah,
so that everybody knows, what happened was, you know, whether it was by divine hand or just Tim had a really good idea, but, you know, we decided to split the season into volumes.
Right.
So this particular season, to pick a word, you know, which is the death of Kaido Nakamura, the paintings which lead up to HRG's death, the virus, the idea that 93% of the population is dead 1 year from now, Matt and Matt's father, all of the people that are in the older generation that were there in the 1970s, that entire story reaches its conclusion at episode 11.
Wow.
And that was always the intent for that to happen, so that if you didn't watch in the fall and you wanted to watch another chapter of Heroes, that you would begin that in January. Our question now is whether or not it'll be that way. And so, you know, what we did was we made sure that episode 11, which I happen to have written, was both the fall finale and could be the season finale.
Okay.
It's not as satisfying, obviously, if you only got 11, you're expecting 24 of them.
Sure.
But, you know, we're not stuck in the same place that Lost is, in the same place that 24 is. And 24 has already declared they're not coming back.
Yeah, yeah. Or Smallville,
you know, they have 9 episodes out of 24. So what are they going to do?
Right. Yeah, they're not going to stop the clock and make everybody wait for a year or however long.
No.
Right.
I mean, it basically, you know, the way they describe it to people is, you have to think about these things like they're 500-page novels. And for most shows, they've only written 367 pages. But it's designed to be a 500-page novel.
Sure.
And so what you have is, you know, 133 other pages that are blank, which people would be upset by. So, you know, we did a smart thing, which was we figured out that we couldn't do a 500-page novel. We'd do a 340-page novel, and when you get to page 340, that's the end of the novel.
Okay.
There'll be elements that are left over, obviously, just like there were elements from last year. There'll be characters that are in the middle of cliffhangers and that kind of thing. We just don't know whether or not we're going to be able to come back. Now, we're having this conversation on the night of the 19th.
Right.
We've been told that they're going to return to the bargaining table on the 26th.
Yes.
And it is certainly our expectation that they would not have come back unless there is a deal to be made. It doesn't make any sense otherwise.
Okay.
So it is very possible that by the time episode 11 airs on December the 3rd, we will have been asked to go back to work. In which case, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do because we stopped.
Right.
And we literally were, you know, were shut down. So the problem with it is that, you know, the last 3 or 4 weeks, we would have been writing the episodes that we would be shooting next.
Sure.
So there's going to be some kind of lag. I'm not entirely sure, and I'm not, you know, that's not my department, but I don't see how we are going to start shooting again before January.
Okay.
Because we don't have any scripts. So,
right.
But we certainly know it, depending upon what they'll give us. And I don't think they'll give us a full order because I don't think we can actually make it given the time that we have. But let's say, I would say max 10, minimum 6.
Okay.
I think we'll get those. And you'll probably see him in, you know, April and May.
Wow. That's, and yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out because yeah, I can't believe that they
were
fully.
It's a big mess, is what it is.
Yeah, well, and that's, that was the point.
But the thing about it is it's not a secret. So people are going to be aware that in January and February, a lot of their favorite shows are not on. You know, and instead they're going to be watching, you know, The Biggest Loser Eat the Biggest Car.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no offense, man, but thanks. Thanks a lot.
No. But look, you know, my fear, and I think a lot of people's fear is that this is what happened to Major League Baseball, which is, you know, the players went on a strike, and all of America said, well, then fine, we're not going to watch baseball anymore.
Well, I understand, but I don't. I think your show's safe.
No, I mean, look, you can't bet on anything. I mean, I
understand.
You know, on top of everything else, let's say we go off the air for 2 or 3 months. Just getting people aware that we're back and how long we're back for and what does that mean, that's not an easy task.
I understand. I can appreciate that. You guys have always been good, though, about working the internet and doing things like my podcast and G4 and all these other things to cross-promote. And I think you guys are a little more savvy in terms of promotion and marketing, and plus built your audience when there was no show to begin with to give yourselves, you know, the initial push that I think, you know, started the sensation.
Look, if it was all that calculated and it worked, then we're geniuses. The truth is we just threw enough pots and pans at the wall that suddenly we had a kitchen. But, you know, in fairness, you know, Kring and certainly Jesse and the marketing department at NBC very aggressively chased the idea that this audience needed to know that we cared about them and know that they could interface with us in a number of different ways. And whether that was the online comic or whether that was through the podcasts or whether or not the web commentary that went on during the shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we certainly took a site in NBC.com that essentially was a dead site and gave people a reason to drive traffic to it.
Damn straight.
And is now, I believe, the most popular of the broadcast television sites. And but, you know, it's by no coincidence that Mark Warshaw, who was one, certainly, if not the inventor, was one of the earliest pioneers of webisodes and doing them on Smallville, who I brought over, and you know, Jesse, who was among the group and certainly was in the forefront of the group over at Lost that created all of the ideas of going to the internet the next day in order to get clues, working with the Fuselage fan base that was, you know, so rapidly and rabidly looking for clues every single show, that, you know, we've settled into a nice, very healthy, you know, 13 million, 13 million viewers. And that's just here. The scope of the show now,
it is
150 markets.
Yeah. I've seen what the BBC
and the DVD, it really is more of a worldwide show now than it is who watches the show in America.
I've seen what the BBC has done because I love listening to BBC Radio, and I know they have a weekly, you know, catch up, and much like Doctor Who Confidential, have a behind the scenes show. Is that what ends up on the DVDs? basically? Because I
that's something that's all theirs.
Okay.
We provide a lot of material access to them, but that was something that they're producing themselves, and it's fantastic. But it really literally comes down to the fact that the shows are actually 43 minutes long. Yes, you are watching 17 minutes worth of commercials. it is one of the dark secrets of television. But the BBC doesn't work like that. They don't have commercials.
Right.
So you get to the, but they have shows that start on the hour. So they produce these 15-minute documentaries that are mostly about how the show is made.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is critical commentary that they put in there at the end.
That's really cool. I know that there's a radio version of that as well that might be just a fan show, but I know that's also available on BBC Radio. So for people who don't have access to the television version we're talking about, I know there's a radio one that is accessible via the web as well.
Well, it's nice to know that people that don't have televisions listen to radio. I didn't realize that we were in the 30s again.
Jack Benny is coming up next.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I meant Americans.
Today, this is McGillicuddy, wherever you are.
I meant more in terms of people who weren't able to have access to British television. Of course, if you're listening to a podcast, I think you might know a way of figuring out a way of watching that stuff. But anyway, back to the show. I wanted to congratulate you guys, and I'm glad you mentioned Alias and Lost. All right, you didn't mention Alias, but you mentioned Lost. And I know Jeff. Well, I know Jesse's from Alias.
Yes,
and
yes.
I wanted to point out something that I noticed, especially based on tonight's episode, about the character of Noah Bennett. There's a lot of Jack Bristow in Noah Bennett. And I mean from the sense that Noah Bennett is kind of the Batman of the show, where it's like he may not have any powers, but he always has a plan. And I understand that the way that things ended up, he didn't want a plan of getting still shot in the eye. But in terms of the way that Wes just, you know, crashed in, and was able to, you know, slam L and just that great action moment. It was excellent, and it came unexpected, as I'm sure that was the hope of you guys writing it. But I just keep reinforcing how indispensable this guy is. And that's why when he got shot, it was a great oh shit moment of, oh, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, this guy can't die. He's awesome. And it was so great to then see the wonderful surprise of the ending. I mean, obviously we're airing this after the show, so I feel comfortable talking about this, and we'll put spoiler warnings up and make sure that people know not to listen if they haven't already seen the show. But I thought that was really cool, and I just think it's amazing because I remember you saying initially too, this was going to be kind of a character that has evolved and really didn't start off as that major of a player in the story. I'm glad to see that he's as cool as he's become. There's no question.
A lot of the credit goes to Jack Coleman, who plays the part.
Cool.
And who could have simply last season played it on one note, and then we'd be having nothing. And he had six lines in the pilot, and so you never know. What happened was, as we went along, as things happened, it was a perfect marriage of character and actor. We found that whatever we threw at him, whether it was that he had to be incredibly dark, as he was this year when he shot his mentor in the head, or whether or not he was trying to be the best dad he could be, that moral conflict, that idea of someone who was morally gray, certainly one of a lot of people's favorite episodes last season was Company Man, which was sort of his origin story. And it's just been a great character and a great ride. And, you know, when we first came up with the idea that Isaac Mendez Penny would show that he had been shot, we built sort of this arc was all the way getting up to that moment. And then, you know, for us, the difference between our show and most shows is that you would have ended the show with him getting shot in the eye, and then woke him up at the beginning of the next episode. But that's not what we do. You know, we let people have a heart attack during the commercial, and then we bring them back and go, it's okay. You know, but nothing happens on our show that doesn't pay a price. So we'll see what will happen next. I think that's the best thing I can tell you.
I understand. And I don't expect to get any answers about Bob, beyond, again, crediting Stephen Tobolowsky, who is showing a different side of his acting in this character. The guy has always been a wonderful, goofy comedy character actor. He was great in Groundhog Day and so many other films and TV series when he does pop up. And he's an awesome bad guy, and it's fun to see him. And certainly we learned an interesting dark secret tonight about him and Elle. That was kind of cool, and will, I'm sure, play out in the last two episodes. But he cracks me up, and I always look forward to seeing him. And he's been a lot of fun in Volume 2.
Steve's been, you know, really extraordinary, and the character Bob is somebody that we knew from the very beginning was going to be really important in being able to show a face of the company that would be, again, something that would make you uncomfortable, and you wouldn't know whether or not it was a force of good or not. And you know, people still don't know. You know, is the company doing something that is helpful, or is the company working under its own agenda, an agenda which has not yet really been revealed?
Yeah, and Angela's kind of words to Parkman tonight, too, in terms of the sacrifices we made for your generation.
Mm-hmm.
And still not knowing who among the group has powers, who doesn't. You know, there's obviously a blood connection with certain heroes, but is that the case for the whole company? We don't know. I don't expect you to tell us right now. But it's fun peeling the onion every week and getting closer.
We're hoping that we're peeling it fast enough. I mean, we there are certain things that obviously we've kept, you know, to ourselves. But there's an awful lot of stuff that continually gets revealed and opened up. And you know, I'd even forgotten that that folks didn't know the relationship between Elle and Bob. Because I'm so far ahead,
sure,
that I had kind of forgotten what had gone on. Although I was there when we slipped in the call in the rain at the end of episode 5 when she was first introduced, when she said, "Daddy, you know, I'll come home."
Oh, that's right. And even Wes being connected to Bennett's mentor. Now, someone told me, and we can excise this, Jeff, if this is, you know, off limits, but someone recognized Wes in the Russian's picture, family portrait, when...
No, it's totally wrong.
Oh, okay, cool. You see?
No,
that's good. I'll leave
this
in. That's awesome.
I love when people find that stuff, but no, there's...
Okay, good.
There's nothing there.
Well, as long as there's not a Luke and Leia thing with the cheerleader
and
Wes.
No, the...
You got two flying men. You can understand the concern about that, I think, too.
Yes. We actually just found it all. When we first started talking about Wes and who he was going to be, and I was actually the one that pitched the idea that he'd be able to fly, and that would sort of get under Noah's skin. That, you know, that the daughter was attracted to a boy who had the same power that.
That daddy has.
Real biological father had.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Nick, who plays Wes, has done a remarkable job. There's so many times when I look at him that he reminds me of Tom Welling, and
that's cool.
Makes me laugh.
That's cool.
He's still the boy who can fly, so.
Well, and a guy who enjoys it seems more than Nathan does, obviously.
Absolutely. and again, that's one of the things that I'm hoping people aren't missing, because it's certainly very clearly that the volume is called Generations, but that I think people are thinking about it up and are not necessarily thinking about the fact that there's a whole nother generation, which is Claire and West and Al and
Micah
and Molly, who are the children of our generation. So, you know, it's just been a lot of fun being able to build these three tiers, and who knows what else is out there. So that's the best part about it.
That's cool. Now here's a question that came up over the Big Apple convention that I thought was kind of interesting, and you feel free to answer it any way you want. Is the comic Ninth Wonder still going on despite the death of Isaac Mendez?
In the reality of the continuity of the show?
Yes.
Um,
I think we stopped there.
I think we established last season that there was only one more issue.
Okay.
That he was doing, but we've never established that Ninth Wonders is a magazine that was only contained stories by Isaac Mendez. It wasn't like he self-published. He had someone that he was turning.
Sure.
You know, there were conversations about an editor calling and things like that. So, and if we go on the assumptions that some of the stories that are collected now in the Heroes Hardback through Wildstorm that are the online comics, that, you know, theoretically those are all part of the ongoing storyline that is Ninth Wonders.
That's cool. And by all means, you know, pimp the book. It is Christmas season and everything, and I'm sure the book is selling
well. You
know
what? It's a book that I did not have a great deal to do with. Obviously, when we started up and we started talking about who should work on it and who should work on the online stuff, and I, you know, very much encouraged Aaron Colite and Joe Pekaski, who were these terrific writers who had not worked a lot in comics, to just go and embrace it and do it, and if they needed any help, I'd be there, and I don't think they ever asked for help because they're too friggin' professional. But, you know, it's sort of extraordinary that for almost a year, we have consistently put out 5 to 7 pages of brand new comic book story, without missing a single one of our air dates. And so when it came time to collect it, you know, we didn't know what that was all going to come together and smell like. Richard Starkings and J.G. Rochelle, who worked at Comicraft and who designed the Ninth Wonder site and who are just incredibly, incredibly talented guys, you know, put this whole thing together. And Wildstorm was terrific about basically getting out of the way and letting us direct it editorially. The guys at Aspen went in and recolored about 70% of the stuff, because when you translate it off a computer screen onto a page, it really needs to be reworked.
Okay.
Or else it'll just turn into something else. And you know, for $24.95, it's 350 pages or something, and it's just great. It's just a great looking book with stories that are very compelling, that fill in some of the gaps in mm-hmm. between the episodes. You know, one of the things that we created the whole webcomic for was specifically to tell the story of one of our characters, and it turned out to be Hannah Gintelman, the character that was known as Wireless,
mm-hmm.
And that we could introduce her on the show and then take her into the comic, and then in the comic show both her origin and also ultimately lead up to her entire story without giving away the spoiler.
Very cool.
And it was a terrific experiment that paid off great and pays off in a very simple way by just looking at that collection.
Excellent. I do want to talk to you about Red Hulk that's coming up, and as much as you want to talk about it or the Ultimates, I know they're coming up in a couple weeks.
It's a little frightening that after, you know, it's been pretty much, I guess, 2 years since we started on the Ultimates.
Wow.
Certainly from the initial concept stage. You know,
so you don't remember?
It was difficult to get up and going until Mark Miller and Brian Hitch had fully committed to what the end of what their story was.
Mm-hmm.
So we just kept bouncing our story around to a place where it would feel like of its own thing, and still respect what Mark and Brian had done. I honestly, it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever worked on. Joe Maniera and Chris Leitner, Chris, who sort of digitally painted the book. You know, when Chris came onto the scene in 1997,
with his company Liquid, they reinvented how comics are colored.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's in the process of doing it again on this book. Just his concept of both color choice and light mixed with dark, he does it differently than everybody else does, in the same kind of way that Richard Starkings doesn't letter a comic the way anybody else does. They're just the best at what they do. And so they make the book look better, and they make me look better, and that's why we get along so well.
That's cool. Now, I heard that it's a five-part story now?
It is a five-part story. It initially was going to be a six-part story.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things that happened was when we started talking about what is going to happen in Ultimatum, I suddenly realized that we had an opportunity to tie up the ends of the story in a very specific way by the end of the fifth chapter, and really expand what would have been one issue into this whole cataclysmic event.
Okay.
That will, I know people say it all the time, but it will change the Ultimate Universe forever.
Cool.
And I've not done one of these. I certainly was there and helped out with Civil War and with One More Day and Fallen Sun was that was basically mine. But I was doing an epilogue to a story that Ed Brubaker had slaved over for 2 years.
I understand.
So this was really the first thing since I've gone back to Marvel where I've, you know, kind of run the ball, and it's just been a lot of coordinating, because while we're doing this, Brian is also telling the origin of the Ultimate Universe, so that it's kind of important to understand how it all began so that it can basically end.
And that's then pushing Ultimate Origins to the summer, and then Ultimatum follows? Is that how that works?
That's what I've been told. Again,
You're buried in Heroes.
I'm so bad at being able to make a schedule. For me to be able to comment on a schedule would not be the best idea for anyone involved.
I understand. Well, now, and everybody understands and knows Heroes takes as much time as it does and stuff. So does that, you know, that's why I'm curious about this Red Hulk story as well. Is it an ongoing? Is it a mini series? Is it, what is
it? No, it's an ongoing monthly series.
Okay.
It is the ongoing Hulk book. You know, the Incredible Hulk will become the Incredible Herc.
Yes.
and we'll stay that way.
Okay.
There's not going to be another Hulk book. And then, as it's now been announced, Greg Pak will be taking the stories that he wants to tell and telling them with more of the Planet Hulk world and with the character that people refer to as the Son of Hulk.
Yes, Scar.
But
okay.
The Hulk story, you know, the traditional characters that we've come to know between the Hulk and She-Hulk and Iron Man and Leonard Sampson and
Thunderbolt Ross
and some other surprises that we can't really get into.
I understand.
All those people are going to be running around in what will be a more traditional Hulk book. You know, I've made this joke before, and that, you know, I think if people are given a choice between a book which is Hulk Smash or Hulk Think, they want to see Hulk Smash.
I enjoyed World War Hulk, and I'm sure
it's fantastic.
But I think you're right. I think, well, we go in waves. I think you know, the best editorial decisions are when they're able to time it right, where, okay, we've had Hulk Smash, now let's have Hulk Think, let's get back to Hulk Smash. So, you know, it is time to get back to traditional stuff. I thought Planet Hulk and World War Hulk was a wonderful epic, but I think you're right that a nice meat and potatoes Hulk book is due, and I'm confused. I thought Bruce Banner's dead and is sitting at the bottom of wherever the hell he's sitting in the bottom of.
Well,
you look pretty
I'm
dead
sure
to me, pal.
Bruce Banner isn't dead. I'm just saying that there's a Hulk running around.
And he's red. Ooh.
No, there's absolutely a Red Hulk. There's no two ways about it. He's on the cover.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. You're running out of colors, Jeff. You're running out of rainbow colors, man.
You know what? The funny part about it was this one is not actually all mine. This was a situation where this was a combination of where Greg's story was headed, what was going on with Mark Panik over in editorial, and clearly Joe Quesada had a big hand in it because Ed and I were working on a story which we had talked about, which essentially was called The Strongest There Is, where it gave Ed the opportunity for the Hulk to beat the crap out of everybody. And it's a, you know, and the one scene that everyone seemed to respond to was that, you know, Hulk was in the middle of a fight and he looked over and there was the Watcher and he said, "What do you want?" And the Watcher said, "I don't want anything. I just want to sit here and watch." And then Hulk went over and punched the Watcher in the face and knocked him out and said, "I don't want you watching me." And, you know, once I had that, I was like, "Oh, well, I don't care what the story is about as long as I can get to that scene."
Absolutely.
And
that guy's been needing it for a while, actually.
So
that's very good.
You know, we were, you know, working on what that was going to be when Joe called and said, "Listen, do you know about these plans to do the Red Hulk?" And I, you know, no. And he gave me just a little, you know, 2-3 lines on it, and then basically said, "The reason why we thought maybe you'd want to do it is because we want to work it as a mystery. That there'll be secrets that involve a lot of different things, including identities and stuff like that." And so I said, "Well, you know, mostly I needed to talk to Ed because Ed had told me about this Strongest Is In story before he came to Marvel. So, or came back to Marvel. And then Ed and I spent a weekend, talking on the phone periodically and just coming up with cooler and cooler stuff. And we finally went back and we said, "Yeah, but we want to do it as an ongoing. We don't want to do it just a story. Because after that we want to do this, and after that we want to do this, and after that we want to do this." And they were like, "Great, you know, we could use a new Hulk book." So that's what it began.
Wow. And are you going to be able to handle the monthly deal? I mean, it's, you know, again, the only reason why we ask is because you TV guys, we love you, and then, you know, sometimes stories don't get finished.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can lay that at my doorstep. You know, certainly the books that I've done, you know, the Wolverines came out right on time, and Fallen Son was 5 in a row, and I had to write all 5 at the same time because I had 5 artists.
No, I know, and you did that. It seemed like you said you did that during a break from Heroes, obviously. Or maybe
no,
I'm wrong.
A lot of it is, you know, that extra special time between 4 a.m. and 8 a.m. that I have devoted to my comic book career. It's actually now that during the strike, I've been telling people that I now sleep to 8 because 8 is the new 6. But of course, 6 was the new 4. So anything that gets me away from waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm very happy about.
Wow.
No, the idea is definitely to put Hulk out on a monthly basis, and it's not all that difficult to do. It's also a combination of exactly what Ed is capable of doing.
Yes, indeed.
But, you know, what happens is you tend to get 4 out of the box, and then the 5th one gets a little creaky, and then the 6th one is probably a month late. And, you know, nobody plans for it to be that way, but...
Hey, man, if you could do 10 a year, I'll be happy. That's cool.
Yeah, well, and I wish that's what we could do. I wish we could just say to people, it's just going to be 8 this year. Just relax, and they'll be terrific.
Well, or maybe schedule it the way Brubaker does Criminal and the way Fraction does Casanova, where you do an arc and you go away for a couple months and you come back.
Yeah, well, that works out great, unless you're working on an Icon, in which case...
Yeah, I suppose so.
The publishing company would like to have that book out there every month.
I understand, man.
But, again,
I'm in the we want it good camp. Don't worry, Jeff.
Yeah,
it's cool.
I mean,
we want it good.
At the level of, you know, when you read these things together a year later.
Yeah, who remembers?
Cares.
Exactly.
No one remembers.
I'm with you.
No one remembers that Dark Knight was late. No one remembers that Watchmen was late. No one remembers.
I remember. But I don't care. I understand.
Yeah, and it's
been going on for too many years, man. It's cool.
And I think it's great that, you know, it's become a place where people plant a flag in the ground. But but the truth of the matter is, what you wind up with is the opposite, which is, here's a monthly comic that comes out, and six of the stories are crap. So that by the time you get done, you go, why am I reading this book? And then you never hear anybody say, well, you want to know why I read that book? Because it comes out every month. It's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Here's your choice. You can have six great stories that come out, or you can have 12 great stories that come out all the time. I'd pick that one. Or how about this? How about 12 stories that come out on time and 8 of them not so good?
Yeah, well, sad. There's a reason why they stopped making Sad Sack, so I understand that. And it was on time every month. Don't get me wrong.
It would be too easy for me to point to an awful lot of comics that are printed today.
Oh, I understand. And no offense, Sad Sack fans.
You just want to go, a tree died for this? Are you kidding me? this is why we should have comics on computers.
You're here. Hey, I just saw Jeff Bezos on Charlie Rose talking about how he's perfected the e-book.
So, yeah, well, good for him.
Well, yeah, exactly. Maybe we're a step closer. Is this all your plate can handle as far as comic books, Red Hulk, Ultimatum, and Ultimates?
Oh, please, come on.
I'm asking.
I mean, even when I was writing comics as a comic book writer, it's dangerous to get me to commit to anything more than two a month. And the truth is, you shouldn't, you know, my personal feeling is that once you get out past that, even if you're a full-time guy, you should spend at least a week writing a book. Mm-hmm. And so if you're writing five books, the math is wrong, unless you're Bendis, in which case you clearly have got slave labor in your basement that are actually breaking the stories for you, and then you're coming in later and doing a dialogue polish.
He's teaching his four-year-old
way to do it. Yeah, he can't physically do how much work that he does. So he's either been cloned, or that poor kid of his
is
out there just scribbling away.
Daddy, look what I made Spider-Man do now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great, honey. Keep it up. Four more pages.
Four more. 12 more.
And then milk and cookies.
You know, look, the most disciplined and obviously nicest guy in comics, Jeff Johns, you know, he comes in every day and he's, you know, he's got a little list and it just cracks me up. He just walks in and, you know, I said, what are you going to do today? Oh, I have to do 8 pages of Justice League, and then after that I have to do 9 pages of Green Lantern, and then after that I'm doing, you know, 9 pages of Legion of Superheroes or whatever the hell he's doing. And I just look at him and I go, really? That's what you're doing today? And then he'll look at me and he'll go, what are you doing? And I'll go, you know, the Hulk.
The Red Hulk.
And then at the end of the day he'll come to me and he'll go, how'd you do? And I went, not so good. And I'll look at him and he'll go, well, I finished 23 pages on 9 books. Well, okay.
He's happy the treehouse is full again, that you guys are able to go back to the office.
Yes,
and stuff.
We are certainly back in the good graces of the house. people keep coming by and you know, as per usual, nothing gets done.
Is Heinberg and BKV going to come back too, or?
They're certainly welcome. I've seen Alan. I've not seen Brian. Brian has become a rat. This is sort of like his dream come true is the strike, because he now can actually be the leftist commie, the bastard that we know that he is. And so he can wrap himself in the big hammer and sickle and go out and fight for the workmen of the world.
He told me he was
no
too busy picking up.
That means I just decided that I was going to make Brian into that guy.
No, you're right, man. He told me that he's going to be too busy picketing. I can't talk to you. I'm like, all right, man. Whatever. You're cool.
Whatever.
We love you.
Show the man.
Well, he's a great writer. There's a lot of brain power in that little office of yours, your guys. I mean, the four of you.
We try
fighting.
Our best to dumb it down as best we can. That's why I come into work, to sort of raise the bar for the rest of the guys.
Well, dude, listen, I'll wrap up and say thanks. I appreciate you doing this. We're doing this late night, literally right after you watched Heroes. And thank you, because, you know, and I'm going to have it on record that you're going to come back and at least do the wrap-up show that you've written. You've written the 11th show.
I will absolutely do that, and I definitely want to
with Jesse.
Do a show with Jesse so
yeah.
that we can at least, you know,
clown around.
Everybody understand exactly how much we hate one another.
By all means, no, and I hope that, and we can do it for the 11th show. And I will be talking to Jesse next week and talk to him about his episode as well. So we'll do a nice little wrap up of Volume 2.
That'd be fantastic.
fantastic.
And when the stories get going, we'll talk Ultimates and Red Hulk, and hopefully you'll be back doing Heroes, and we'll try to figure out a different time.
It's actually the first week of December is a pretty big week, because it'll be both my episode, which is on December the 3rd, and then the first issue of Ultimates, which comes out on December the 5th, that Wednesday. And then Red Hulk doesn't ship until January, so still have some breathing room here.
Cool. All right, man. Well, we'll talk a little bit more maybe about the Ultimates the week of, and I thank you for the time, and I'll talk to you in a few days.
Take good care.
So that's writer Jeff Loeb. I appreciated his time tonight, and we'll be appreciating his time in the weeks ahead. The plan is to have Jesse Alexander come on for another episode of Word Balloon, and we'll probably have that for you by next Wednesday. And then the following Wednesday, we should have a wrap-up on Heroes Volume 2 with both Jeff and Jesse. That's the plan. They've been itching to do a show together, and I've really wanted to try and make that happen. And hopefully all of our schedules will work out that week of December 3rd, and likely by December 5th. We'll get a nice wrap-up of Heroes Volume 2. This episode of Word Balloon, however, has been brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. They've got all new 75% discounts on pre-ordered new releases and more discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. On sale right now at MailOrderComics.com, Hulk number 1, written by Jeff Loeb, drawn by Ed McGuinness. Regularly priced at $2.99, the discounted price just $1.79. From MailOrderComics.com. Every month you'll be able to enjoy standard discounts of 38% off on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers, but they've doubled the specials with discounts of 50% or more. For all the details, go to MailOrderComics.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, find Word Balloon all over the internet. You can find us at iTunes, at Newsarama.com, MySpace.com/WordBalloon, and of course via email. If you ever want to give me any questions or comments about the show, you can reach me, john@wordballoon.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next time. In the meantime, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.